First of all, it's very good to be back among you. It's hard to be back, but it's good to be back. People have been asking about mom and dad, and I don't know what to say. I saw a real change in dad this time. He's really slowed down. We made a trip, and even everywhere else we went, I had to hold dad by his hand every step of the way. And I have not done that in my previous visits. So mom is good, and mom's health is fine, but I think this is a new phase for dad, 86. So you can imagine how hard it was to just pull away myself from home and get on the taxi ride to the airport. So emotionally and physically jet lagged, it's gonna take me a couple of days to get back to be myself. Having said all that, just an hour before we left, we were all sitting in the living room and, you know, watching some TV and distracting our minds from what's going to happen. And Dad looks at me and he says, you know, this hair thing, he says, do it one more time. He, you know, give it to the locks of love. He said, do it one more time and then cut your hair and dye it black and and stop looking like an old man. So I guess he's okay, right? Mom looked at me and mom said, you know, he's losing it. But believe me, he's not. He's very sharp. He knows what's going on. So that's my joke for this time. Who knows what happens next time. I was at home a week longer this time. And I got to visit, besides traveling with my parents a little bit, I got the opportunity to visit families and institutions that I otherwise would not have the time to visit. Many of these families and institutions are in my neighborhood. Not that I'm surprised, but as I entered into conversation with these families, one of the things that really hit me is the immensity of the needs of some of these families. If I had $1 million, I would do anything to just ease their pain and bring some relief. And institutions of abandoned people who are taken care of by just ordinary lay folks. I was overwhelmed, if you ask me, just knowing the needs, the immensity of the needs of these people. As a couple, for instance, with four daughters, struggling to educate them, only the husband works. And their main concern is to marry off their daughters, because in India, a parent's responsibility ends when they have married their daughters off in a good way. So, I know the struggle that they have. And there's this woman who works as a maid, whose husband is paralyzed, but supports the education of her two children and her husband, just working as a maid. She barely makes it. There's a couple who got into debt so that their son could immigrate to Dubai. You know, many Indians go to Dubai in the Middle East, and Doha and Oman and Muscat and all these places, and they work. But the job that he was expecting is not the job that was actually waiting for him. They took a huge loan to get this guy to Dubai, and now they're in debt and they can't pay it off. There's this woman whose husband is an alcoholic, and the only son who supported her met with a serious bike accident, and now he's laid up. And boy, is her life completely turned around. Folks, money is not everything, but I wish I could just ease the pain. I tried to help. I tried to help some families, but I was overwhelmed. And in our own country here, in our own neighborhoods here, perhaps you've met with families and situations where you felt overwhelmed. We're not alien to poverty, are we? There's hardship even around here. So it is with this sentiment of being overwhelmed that I wrote this homily on my flight back to Dayton. And I'm choosing to reflect with you on the very first sentence of today's second letter of Paul to the Corinthians. Here's what Paul writes. He says, as you excel in every respect, in faith, discourse, knowledge, of earnestness, and in the love we have for you, may you excel in this gracious act also. But he doesn't explain what that gracious act is. He's asking the Corinthians to excel in this gracious act. And what is this gracious act? What does he mean by that? As we will see, it's got to do with the immensity of the needs of some of the early churches and how the Corinthians are being asked to respond to it. That's what it's really about. What is the immensity of the needs of the early Christian church? We must remember that the early Christian church was a very poor church. It's unlike what we are today. Very poor. That's because bulk of the people who formed Christians were poor from the lowest sections of society. Christianity was not popular among the Roman upper class. And Christians could not hold jobs in the Roman offices because of emperor worship. So really speaking, by choosing to become Christian, they were alienating themselves from everything that provided them social context. Many of the early Christian churches were poor, but particularly this was the case with the church in Jerusalem. Almost like a mother church. And yet, you know that Christ was crucified just outside Jerusalem. There was tremendous persecution of the Christians. And many Christians fled from Jerusalem. Now, Paul, aware of the situation of the church in Jerusalem, asks the other Christian communities to help the church in Jerusalem because they are overwhelmed with the immensity of their needs. The Corinthians had started a collection for the church in Jerusalem, and in 1 year, they had collected pretty much nothing and they had left the task incomplete. The Macedonian church, on the other hand, they went ahead and completed the task. And they sent their money to Jerusalem, whereas the Corinthians are sitting on their hands. And so Paul says, folks, we are responsible for one another. We must take care of one another. So please complete this act. Please bring this gracious act to completion. So Paul is really pleading on behalf of the poor churches, asking the Corinthians to complete their task. So he asks them to excel in graciousness. Excel in this gracious act also. Be gracious. Now, Paul's exhortation to the Corinthians to be gracious could mean so many things for us, huh? To be gracious. What can that mean for us in our times today? That's the question that I'm raising. And that this could mean many things, but I want to focus on three things. Being gracious. First of all, bringing work to completion. As I said earlier, Paul wrote to the Corinthians about this gracious act because the Corinthians had failed to bring the collection for Jerusalem to completion even after a year. By this, Paul was emphasizing the need for Christians to be aware of each other's needs and perhaps telling us, folks, that we are responsible for one another. In our daily work and responsibilities toward God, family, neighbors, colleagues, society, and particularly the poor, we must be gracious. Not only in our thought, but bring it to completion. Bring our work to completion. So just in our home, we can give numerous examples, right? But just in our home, take a look at some of the work that needed to be completed and perhaps you never got to it. I'm a procrastinator. I know exactly what this means. But sometimes we let work be incomplete. So, you know, I'm just bringing up situations that are humorous, but maybe you promised your wife that one day you'll cook dinner. Hopefully she can eat it, but... Or maybe you promised your husband that, you know, you'll clean this closet out. Or as children, you told your parents, you know, next time, I'll bring up my grades. Or at work, you told your boss that you will excel, and, you know, maybe you never... It needn't be these situations, but... Being graciousness is about completing a task because we are responsible for one another, because we care for one another. And that is what Jesus did. God sent him to accomplish the work of salvation, and Jesus was more than gracious in accomplishing his work so that our need for salvation is met. So that's the first thing. Bring your task to completion. Secondly, graciousness is about imitating, and I'm using this word very carefully, imitating the radical graciousness of God. See, Paul does not merely ask the Corinthians to excel in graciousness, but he also provides the theological reasons why they should do so. And here's the reason. Paul says, "For you know the gracious act of our Lord Jesus Christ." You know the gracious act of our Lord Jesus Christ. You know the gracious act of our Lord Jesus Christ. That though he was rich, for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. So Paul is not saying be gracious because it's fashionable. Paul is saying be gracious because that's the example of Christ, and we are being called to imitate this Christ. In other words, he was simply asking the Corinthians to imitate the graciousness of God in Jesus Christ. And folks, we are not in any doubt about the graciousness of Christ, are we? There are two stories in today's gospel reading. Jesus goes to the house of this man whose daughter is dying, and in between he meets this woman who's hemorrhaging for 12 years. He doesn't have to do anything, but he's gracious. He enters their lives, he enters their homes, he lays his hand, and he brings healing, and he gives them hope. And then most of all, I call it radical graciousness because Jesus was not simply doing some gracious things. That was his lifestyle. It takes him to the cross. This is the gracious act of God in Jesus Christ. This is radical graciousness. The cross is the greatest symbol of the radical graciousness of God. It's the kind of graciousness that calls for self-sacrifice. It's being gracious when it hurts, not when it's convenient. Jesus became poor for our sake. He suffered for us. Jesus died for us in a radical act of graciousness. And Paul is asking us today, not merely to do some gracious things, but to become radically gracious, like Jesus. Thirdly, there are two situations which is very real to us today, to which I want to apply this virtue of graciousness, almost what I call a theology of graciousness. And I want to highlight both of them today for us. So earlier this month, Pope Francis released his encyclical on climate change. And it's called Laudate Si, or Praise Be. He's drawing on the words of St. Francis of Assisi. So he begins this encyclical by saying, Laudato si, mi Signor, or praise be to you, my Lord. And reminds us of St. Francis's understanding that our common earth, common home, the earth, is like a sister with whom we share our life and a beautiful mother who opens her arms to embrace us. This is how St. Francis of Assisi understood the earth, as a sister, as a mother, as somebody, not something. And then Pope Francis continues saying, he says, this sister now cries out to us because of the harm we have inflicted on her by our irresponsible use and abuse of the goods with which God has endowed us, endowed her. We have come to see ourselves as lords and masters, entitled to plunder her at will. The violence present in our hearts, and I like that term there, even though it's a terrible term, a phrase, I like that. The violence in our, we become a violent people. The violence in our hearts, wounded by sin, is also reflected in the symptoms of sickness evident in the soil, in the water, in the air, and in all forms of life. That is why the earth herself, burdened and laid waste and among the most abandoned and maltreated of our poor, she groans in travail. And we know, you're asking what's happening with all this rain, with all this changes in the weather? It's the earth groaning in pain because of the violence that we've done to the earth. And violence today is not only being done toward the earth. If Charleston, South Carolina is any indication, we are doing self-destructive violence to ourselves. What the heck is happening to our nation? Racial, social, and economic violence is destroying us. And I think the answer to these problems today is to exercise the radical graciousness that Christ exercises towards us and to the earth. Graciousness seems to be a very weak word, but if radical graciousness is anything like Christ showed, then it's very powerful, very powerful. What is the harm in us being gracious towards one another? And Paul is saying, please excel in this gracious act also. Today, after this Mass, there is a baptism. There is Ingrid. Ingrid somewhere there? There's Ingrid. She's... Okay, well, many of her family is here. I think about this little baby, right? Today, after Mass, God's life will be just poured upon this baby. Joshua and Gail bring their little baby to be baptized. That's graciousness. God just letting this baby experience God's life. Welcome to eternity. I don't know what you're going to be in the future. I don't know. But God is bringing this baby into eternity. That's graciousness. This bread and wine will be put on this altar today and will be changed into the body and blood of Christ. That's graciousness. That's the gracious act of God. And you and I will receive that graciousness in the form of bread and wine. God could do something so gracious to make it easy for us to receive Christ. That's a gracious act of God. So we are not receiving just, you know, bread and wine. We are participating in the graciousness of God. And so today, as we receive God's graciousness, please, this week, look at your home, look at your family, look at your work, and see how you can be the most gracious husband, wife, child, parent. Excel in it. As you look at people who are poor and who are on the fringes of society and the earth itself, please, please, folks, excel in graciousness. People of God said.